south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Back in the saddle again, watching that train wreck up by you in the States from a nice, safe distance. Hey, hate to say it, told you so, so I won't say it. But, you know, I have faith in all you guys and gals out there who are listening to the show, especially you longtime listeners, because you know you have options. Just think about the other 99.99% of the lemmings up there that don't know what to do. And you know what's cool about this show? I have never, ever once been censored. Oh, well, I should say I've had a few cuss words censored with beeps for sensitive ears and all that. But, you know, there's always been this nagging question on my mind. Why don't people ever put anything away for a rainy day? I'm sure you've seen the data. Less than half of U.S. adults can scrape together $500 for an emergency. I suppose they're thinking there'll always be a government program out there somewhere to save them. Whatever happened to savings and putting away something for a rainy day? I remember my grandma saying it, my mother saying it, and they really did have a sock or a bedpost loaded with cash. Then again, I had my dad and my brothers on the opposite end of the spectrum saying, hey, can't take it with you. So the goal in your life, other than being a nice guy or gal, is to die very old and healthy, though that's an oxymoron, right? How can you die old and healthy? If you were healthy, you wouldn't die, right? Anyway, my dad would always say, the goal is to die old, having almost nothing in your will. In other words, having spent every last dime of it. Since you worked and earned it, why not enjoy it? So, needless to say, all the fights that I remember going on in my household were between my mom and dad arguing about money. She the saver and he the spender. So then how did those conflicting ideas affect us six kids? Well, turns out I've got two sisters and a brother that don't seem to be able to ever save a dime. No matter what they make, they always seem to spend everything they earn, and then some. However, I've got one brother and one sister who've always had a nice nest egg. And wouldn't you know it, they're the two that the other three are always hitting up for emergencies and loans that they never pay back, or when they do, it's always with some hesitation and one of those looks, you know what I mean. Don't you hate that when you lend someone money and when they pay it back, they act like they're doing you a favor? But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about being censored. Speaking of getting censored, you know, I've got a few friends in the media. Media. Whatever that means. And I'm not talking social media. And you know, every one of them are telling me now they seem to have to watch everything they say. They're in a kind of self-censoring mode, whether it's truly conscious or not. They're thinking after they do a piece, who's it going to offend? Always second-guessing. Will they get some pushback? Who's going to lash out next on Facebook and Twitter? Man, who wants to work under those conditions? So anyway, I'm pretty lucky so far in that no one's ever told me I can't talk about this or that, even though my opinions to some might be way out there. I've got no one in management or the podcast bureaucracy putting pressure on me. You know, all the complaints and criticisms I do get come from you listeners out there. Funny, you know, I don't get much hate mail, but when I do get it, they always say things like, Johnny, although I think you're a jerk, I'm not going to stop listening. Maybe it's because I read all my emails and answer most of them personally. So options are what you get when you listen to this show. Specifically, escape routes and plan Bs. And I think one of the best things we've done is develop a specific network of expats in the know. That means we've got some pretty good answers for any questions or problems that might pop up. Obviously, even though everyone's circumstances are quite different. That means there's never a one-size-fits-all plan B, which is why I'm sure so many people have signed up for one-on-one consult calls with me. I've done hundreds of them now, with, once again, plenty of repeat offenders. Who'd have thunk? Not only have I had repeat offenders at every single Expat Insider seminar now, except, of course, the very first seminar, because you can't very well have a repeat offender if you've only had one seminar. How about this? Not only have I had people repeat the seminar twice, I've had some repeat three and even one person four different times. So if you're still wondering whether the seminar is worth it, because you know it's a couple of grand, it's not that cheap. Then again, it's a week long and your hotels are covered. Now, speaking of the seminar, I don't want to keep hammering on the seminar because the next one's quite a ways away. Except to say that my planned August 2020 seminar has been canceled. And you probably know why. It's because airports are changing their rules all the time, and I don't want anyone to get stuck quarantined in some airport on the way to the seminar or on their way home. Because, you see, unfortunately, Latin American airports are following U.S. airport guidelines. Guidelines they can't seem to settle on. They keep changing them all the time. And when they start talking about a second wave of COVID, whether it's real or not, and they start talking about airport restrictions and closures again, well, I don't want anyone to get hung up in that mess. So because of first and third world lunatic airport policies, I've moved the seminar to January 2021. I'm bringing this up again because I'm still getting a trickle of emails to my website, expatplanb.com, with people still going there trying to sign up for the August seminar that's been canceled. Some people didn't get the word yet, so they email me back, and they're saying, Johnny, I'm trying to sign up for the August seminar, but it's not there. It says there's a seminar in January, but where's the August one? So I'm thinking people sending me emails like that haven't caught up with my shows yet, because, you know, a lot of people tell me they're 5, 6, or even a couple of months behind on the shows. They download them into their iPods or Walkmans, whatever. Yeah, remember those Walkmans? Some of those things were as big as a frying pan, remember? And how about those old school antenna dishes? Some of those things were as big as a house. Man, 30 years ago when I first got down and landed in Costa Rica, you could certainly tell the rich from the poor by their antenna dishes. By the way, if you go to expatplanb.com and check out the seminar sign-up sheet, you'll see you can actually sign up for the January 2021 seminar. I know it's quite a few months away, but hey, looks like it's going to be a full house or maybe even oversubscribed. So get in while you can, and of course, the early bird discounts are in effect. So anyway, I promise, after August, as we close in on the seminar date that's already been canceled, I'll lay off, I promise. I certainly don't want to bore you to death or hammer you to death with it. Enough said about that. On with the shoe. You know, with all this mask, no mask, gloves, no gloves, social distancing or not, with all the fake news, real news, and bad science out there, doesn't anyone out there wonder why some people say the social distancing should be 6 feet and others say 3 feet? And if you're looting, picketing, rioting, or protesting, you don't need any social distancing at all. Meanwhile, down here in Latin America, it's 1 meter or 2 meters, depending where you are. And if you want to get prickly about it, 3 feet's a yard, 36 inches, and 1 meter's 39. So what's next? Will idiot governments mandate you carry a tape measure? Why is it nothing's uniform? And who picked 3 feet or 1 yard or 2 yards or 6 feet anyway? If you actually look up the science on it, when someone breathes, sneezes, or coughs, the particles coming out of your mouth or nose will travel over 20 feet. And eventually, if there's no wind and you're not outside, will settle on everything. Think about public restrooms, where most of the toilets don't even have covers on them. Just one flush, and within minutes, everyone gets to share your fecal matter. Totally unacceptable, but that's the way it is. No one seems to have ever have done the real science on public bathrooms. Man, what a great biology feces paper that would be. Theses paper. Even leaving public crapper problems out of the equation. If you're wearing a mask and cough or sneeze, you'll eject a blast of contaminated, particulate-saturated air out of the sides and the edges of your mask that will also travel a distance of 20 feet or more. So in other words, if you cough or sneeze wearing a mask, you'll still be blasting people within 20 feet of your periphery. Go ahead, pick up a physics book and look up laminar flow. And now for something even crazier. I'm sure you've noticed when you go to a hospital, a clinic, a dentist, or a physician's office, you'll see a little red plastic box in practically every room. It's got a biohazard symbol on it. It's for used needles, as well as blood, and saliva-soaked cotton, gauze, and disposables. And when that plastic container gets filled, a registered biohazard pickup service will handle it with care, put it in a truck, and take it down to a registered and certified biohazard incinerator. Nope, they won't take it to a landfill. That's not allowed. It must be incinerated. But here's the rub. According to medical literature, as long as your blood's in your veins, it's not a biohazard. However, once it's out in the open and touches anything else, it's suddenly a biohazard. Same with saliva. As long as it's in your mouth, it's perfectly fine, but once it's expelled, it's a biohazard. In other words, once it touches a tabletop, a piece of gauze, or even a cigarette, it's a biohazard and must be handled accordingly. Now, technically, that means everyone's used mask is a biohazard, though obviously you never see anyone dispose of their mask in red plastic certified biohazard containers, do you? Not to mention you never see anyone throw a cigarette butt in one of those containers either. Nor straws or plastic forks or toothpicks, which could often have blood on them, you know. In fact, if you drive around anywhere these days, you'll see masks on the ground, heaped in garbage cans, and floating down a gutter during a rainstorm. In reality, all this stuff makes no sense at all. And what about all the people who have diabetes who inject insulin daily? What do they do with their needles? Not to mention the tissues and Kleenex we use to wipe off our snotty noses. How about when mom wipes up a kid's bloody nose or a bloody knee when a kid falls on the playground? Does mom put it in a plastic bag and hurry up to the nearest doctor's office and put it in a red plastic biohazard container? Impossible, huh? Well, that's the law, you know. And what about when you nick yourself with a razor? You know that little piece of Kleenex you use to mop up the blood? Technically, that's a biohazard, too. And how about sanitary napkins and tampons? What about used razors and razor blades? And how about every single Band-Aid you ever used? You know, once you peel it off, it's got pus, blood, and a billion bacteria on it. It's a biohazard. Of course, you put it directly into the red biohazard container, right? What? You haven't got one? Well, soon enough, I predict they'll be mandated. And likely Fauci and Bill Gates will make a nickel off every one of them. Now, you remember that book, Three Felonies a Day, right? People always wonder, what felonies am I committing that I don't know about? Well, you know, not following biohazard guidelines, whether you know them or not, depending on the state you're in and the circumstances, is either a felony or a misdemeanor. Meanwhile, biologists have proven the most contaminated things we come into contact with on a daily basis are paper money, doorknobs, faucet handles, kitchen scouring pads, steering wheels, and, drum solo here, TV remote controls, keyboards, and smartphones. Now, I'm certainly not offering up any solutions or answers. Just saying. Oh, and by the way, it seems everywhere you go these days, at least some people are wearing rubber gloves. Next time you see it, have a closer look. Chances are, unless the person has just gloved up very recently, they're absolutely filthy with the fingertip part, a different, darker, scuzzier color. Not to mention, if you look close, when you look through the gloves, you can see there are pools of sweat and humidity building up and stagnating there hour after hour. That means the hand inside the glove is sitting in a petri dish of bacteria just percolating away. And as they sit there bathing for hours at a time in that nice warm layer of soupy sweat, well, let's put it this way. I wouldn't be looking at it under a microscope anytime soon. Oh, and about the fingertip parts of the gloves that get so skanky and discolored. Well, that should give you a really good idea of what's happening with your hands 24/7. With the gloves just giving you a close-up preview of what's happening with your hands every day of your life. Makes you want to spend a little more time washing them, huh? Should put you off eating stuff with your fingers, too. Especially since one Latino doctor recently told me that practically every single person who eats street food has got a guaranteed case of intestinal parasites. In fact, he said about 90% of the cases where they do a hospital workup, that is blood test, urinalysis, stool sample, routinely done for surgical workups, he says the majority test positive for lombrices. Translation? Intestinal worms. Yuck. Most likely cause, he said, eating moist street food with your fingers. Then I said, that would mean that practically every backpacker has lombrices then too, right? And he said, if they eat moist street food with their fingers, no doubt. The question is how to get rid of them. Real easy, he said. The same treatment you use for amoebic dysentery. A couple of pills twice a day for 2 or 3 days. That's it. They're gone. Problem is, he said, it's an epidemic in Latin America and all third world countries because people eat street food and don't wash their hands much. Not that they don't want to, but street food carts don't have available fresh water for clients. Not to mention practically everyone in Latin America eats with their fingers. Have a look. Then I asked the doc, what about gringos, expats, and tourists? He said if you're a frequent hand washer and you stick to eating dry things with your fingers, like bread, cookies, potato chips, etc., there's not much risk. However, eating moist and wet foods with your fingers, that's the real problem. Like tacos, burritos, cheese, chicken, hard-boiled eggs. Some people even eat rice and beans with their fingers, especially young kids. So the question is, do you or I have lombrices? What a revolting development, huh? Well, normally there are no symptoms. They're just living in your gut, symbiotically. Ugh. But you don't have to go to a doctor and get a bunch of tests to find out. Just go to the pharmacy and tell them you need something for amoebas. That stuff will wipe out lombrices, too. Oh, and by the way, if you eat a lot of hot and spicy food, chances are, even if you continuously eat with your fingers, you're not going to get lombrices because they can't live in that environment. In other words, most Mexicans have taken the cure without even knowing it. So then, all you hot sauce and jalapeno lovers, don't you feel better already? Enough said about that. I guess maybe too much said about that, huh? All right, now let's take an email from Chick. He's a Canadian. You know, we've got loads of Canadian listeners. And some would say they have even more reason to get the hell out of Dodge than regular U.S. North Americans because Canadian taxes are even higher. Remember in a previous show I mentioned that every U.S. citizen who works pays more than 50% of his income in taxes. And I can prove it because I have a list of about 100 extra taxes you're paying and you don't even know it. Of course, most of them are not called taxes, they're called licenses and fees, but that's just a diversion. They're taxes. Now, when it comes to Canadians, they pay over 60% of their income in taxes. And you know, when I get into these discussions with Latin Americans, discussions about salaries and what people earn up in the States, they can look it up as well as anyone else and see that the average American family makes something between $45,000 and $55,000 a year, which is an absolute king's ransom to a Latin American whose average yearly income could be a fifth to a tenth of that. And when they hear you can be on disability or welfare in the States and make $1,000 to $1,500 a month, their eyes just light up for a second. Then they have that moment of disbelief and think you're lying. That is, unless they've got close relatives up in the States, who long before we ever got into that discussion, clued them in. But that's another story for another show. So anyway, Chick starts his email. Hello, Johnny. Crazy times, huh? Been working like a double-peckered billy goat since March 15th, and the list is almost done. Plan B, here I come. Our tickets are booked for the 15th of July, and our 14-day isolation hotel is booked in Quito, Ecuador. Been too busy to write lately, but I wanted to say thank you for mentioning the liquor outlets on a past show. All right, me, Johnny here. If you remember a couple of shows ago, I talked about the liquor store dilemma in Canada. Anyway, he says, as soon as that thing blew up, I made a choice. I took the old radio off the shelf in the barbershop, brought it home and only listened to the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's take on the news. Didn't take me long to figure out what was going on. Whilst they took great pains to teach us on the CBC how to wash our hands, they never once mentioned how we might better take care of our immune systems to fight this and any other virus. Every day the Canadian Prime Minister came on and thanked all essential workers, but never once mentioned the thousands of liquor store workers doing daily business with hundreds of thousands of Canadians. Guess that's better left unsaid. Calls to crisis lines and domestic violence increased dramatically, but never once did they mention a 60% increase in booze sales. Might that be a correlation? Absolutely. I wrote letter after letter to the CBC, but they ignored them. Then, just recently, as British Columbia, the province where I live, started opening up, the government tabled new laws to allow public drinking in parks and beaches. If nothing else, this is a telltale sign that most everything we've been told and the protocols the government gives us to follow regarding the virus are pure bunk. Something fishy is afoot, and it's anyone's guess as to exactly what the government is up to. Oh, and Johnny, just a quick note on the Canadian government regarding all those expat wannabes and gonna-bes who need to get their documents apostilled to get residency. Well, here's the dope. Canada did not sign the Apostille Act in 1961, but they made an equivalent Office of Authentication of Documents. So you get your documents authenticated, not apostilled, when you're in Canada. We sent our paperwork Federal Express priority overnight to them, and 3 days later it arrived in our capital. I was then told by the authentication office the papers had to sit in quarantine for 4 or 5 days. So on the sixth day, I telephoned to check in. They informed me the quarantine timeline does not include weekends, only business days. We must, of course, assume then that the virus takes 2 days off on the weekends, too. A perfectly logical conclusion by government, don't you think? Really instills confidence, doesn't it? Anyway, thanks for all you do, Johnny. Regards, Chick from Canada, but not for long. Meanwhile, here's some news that couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch of liars. The headline is this. CNN reporter mugged at knife point live on the air in Brazil. Yep, but now for reason 2226, why? I don't recommend Brazil as a Plan B destination. By the way, I'm sure I told this story before, but probably a long time ago. Last time I was in Ipanema Beach, you know, in Rio de Janeiro. It's world-renowned. Everyone's heard of it, especially the song. I was at a beautiful beachfront hotel, and there were signs all over the place saying, use the beach at your own risk. Beware of pickpockets and muggers. Which begs the question, what's the number one reason people visit Rio? Because of all the magical things they've heard about Ipanema Beach. Right? Oh, man, they're advising you not to leave the hotel grounds and just use the pool. Of course, all the nice hotels on the Strip have their own beaches, but they're really not private. That's true of most beaches in Latin America. Beachfronts themselves are considered public. You can't block them or fence them off for private use, even if you own the property right up to the shoreline. You have to leave a passageway open for people, the public, to walk back and forth and hang out. So then, who are the most logical victims of petty crime? That would be clueless gringo and European tourists hanging out on the beach. Hey, if I was a scumbag, no good, Nick, I'd be working that crowd, too. Anyway, back to this story. I'll read a few snippets of it for you. This is dated just a week ago, July 3rd. It says, CNN reporter Bruna Macedo and her team had set up near Bandeiras Bridge in Sao Paulo, Brazil, on Saturday to report on rising water levels at the Tietê River due to heavy rain. Footage of the incident shows a suspect lurking in the background, looking over the bridge while reporter Macedo speaks to her colleague, Rafael Colombo, who is in the station's studio. After a few minutes into the broadcast, a man wearing a hooded jumper and a beanie hat can be seen approaching the reporter Macedo. Macedo starts talking with the man while her colleague continues to talk about the rising level of the river. The reporter attempts to start reasoning with the man as he pulls out a knife. She then moves a few steps away before giving the man her mobile phone. CNN cameras then pan away from the incident to focus on the street, while reporter Macedo hands the mugger a second phone. He then flees the scene before the broadcast is ended. And all this captured on film. Who says there's no good news coming out of Brazil? And the thief, even though they got him dead to rights on camera, was not apprehended. By the way, typical of those shit for brains at CNN. In this report, they keep on calling the thief an alleged mugger. You know what, you lamestream media guys? Make me sick. What the f*** is alleged about a guy pulling a knife and stealing two phones right on camera? Man, am I glad I don't live in that train wreck of a country called the U.S. of A. Or more precisely, when it comes to the government and the lamestream news, it's the good old U.S. of A holes. Then again, maybe CNN staged the whole thing because their ratings are in the toilet. Nah, that would take half a brain. That would be too creative. Actually, I'm kind of surprised CNN didn't report the thief as a white guy in a MAGA hat. That would have been par for the course, huh? Hey, I'm no Trump fan at all, but the way the media beats up on that guy, man, he's got thicker skin than an elephant. A normal guy would have thrown in the towel a long time ago. Meanwhile, in Panama, two former presidents, Ricardo Martinelli and Juan Carlos Varela, have been banned from leaving the country. They've blocked their passports while under investigation for corruption and money laundering charges. Wow, I'm shocked. Turns out Martinelli, president from 2009 to 2014, being accused of diverting public funds to purchasing himself a media outlet, a TV, radio, and newspaper chain. How about it? Hey, now, that would come in handy if you're a politician, huh? Of course, they both deny the allegations. I'm shocked about that, too. You know, that's why I always say every president, whether in Latin America, the States, whatever, should have just an 8-year term. That'd be 4 years in office and 4 years in prison. How's that sound to you? About these two ex-presidents, surprise, surprise, they both own beach houses and townhouses, and guess where? My jammy. Courtesy of the good neighbor policy, right? I'm shocked again. By the way, speaking of Panama, did you know that the longest road in the world is the Pan-American Highway? Starts in northern Alaska, goes all the way down to Panama. Then, on the southern tip of Panama, there's a 60-mile gap. No road. It's all jungle. Called the Darien Gap. Then the road picks up again in Colombia and goes all the way down to Tierra del Fuego. It's about 12,000 miles long. Funny thing, you know, most gringos and expats who live in Guatemala end up on that road all the time. Because, you know, it passes right through Mexico, into Guatemala, through Antigua, Guatemala, Guatemala City, and on down south to El Salvador, etc., etc. In fact, at my expat insider seminars, we're on and off of it all the time. Now, sometimes the Latin American part of the Pan-American Highway is a perfectly nicely built, six-lane concrete road. And in other places, especially when it goes through one-horse towns with just two or three stoplights, it bottlenecks down to a two-lane asphalt road, and sometimes it's even a gravel road. Bottom line, it ain't smooth sailing, but it really is an eye-opener. For example, when you're going through the Andes on the Chilean-Argentine border, you go through a two-mile-long tunnel. Now, the question always arises, why didn't they finish the thing up? Why is there that 60-mile Darien Gap on the southern tip of Panama? That's right where Central America meets South America, by the way. Well, for a long time, it was an engineering impossibility because that's some of the roughest, toughest terrain there is. Mostly swamp and all snakes, bugs, and crocodiles. Of course, nowadays, with enough dough, it could easily be done. Well, not easily. It's still miserably hot and humid and loaded with bugs. But not an impossibility like it was many years ago. By the way, every time I hear someone say the word impossible, I think of what Napoleon once said. The word impossible is only found in the dictionary of bureaucrats and fools. You got that right. So anyway, in the last 40 or 50 years or so, it has been possible to finish off that road, but they won't do it. Even though you hear Colombian and Panama politicians talking about it all the time, because they expect if it ever happens, there'll be a huge boom in commerce because those are the two countries most immediately affected. Imagine the millions in toll money the politicians can steal. However, we're in the age of the tree hugger. And because there's a couple of indigenous Amazon tribes living there, well, the green folks and the environmental agencies are saying it will encourage an ecological deforestation disaster. The thing is, there are millions of centuries-old hardwoods there. In fact, 6 years ago, in 2014, Panama outlawed the harvesting or cutting down of rosewood for the entire country because it's a rare hardwood that's been predicted would disappear in a couple of generations. However, the Darien Gap is just loaded with the stuff. And still, somehow, illegal loggers are getting in there and pulling it out. Why? Because just one good-sized trunk can go for 10 grand. And now, of course, many people are saying the law in itself has caused artificial shortages, and so the price of the wood has skyrocketed. Yet another case of unintended consequences. That's what you get when idiot governments pass laws without providing funds, equipment, and people to enforce those laws. Oh, and one more thing about the Pan-American Highway. There is an active competition that goes on between extreme bicyclists. There's an ongoing challenge to do the Pan-American Highway, except for the Darien Gap, of course, where they take a boat. You can look it up in the Guinness Book of Records. The fastest time was 117 days by bike, starting in Alaska, going all the way down to the Antarctic. And if you think that's crazy, you can also check out the Guinness Book of Records to see the fastest guy to walk the distance on foot. And the record is 2,426 days. Man, that took more than 6 years. Oh, and if you're thinking about driving the route on vacation, just to sightsee maybe, it's been estimated that at $3 a gallon for gas, you'd spend about $2,500 to do the trip. Much of the time, you'll be going slow because of all the small towns you'll be going through. That means 14 countries worth of traffic jams, border crossings, and bribes. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.